All right, Sue. Good morning. This is a work session of the Portland City Council. It is Tuesday, November 27th, if I have my calendar straight. And today we are going to be talking about the 311 customer service project in the Portland, Oregon website replacement project. I'd like to just make a few introductory remarks if I could. First of all, these two projects, the Portland, Oregon website replacement, otherwise known as the Power Project, good branding, congratulations, that was very well done, and the 311 customer service improvement project, which I believe will transform Portlanders' ability to effectively interact with our government. Customer service in the city currently requires that community members know which of our bureaus are responsible for any of the 300-plus services that the city offers. And obviously, it's not easy. All of us have heard stories about people being transferred from one line to another line to another line to another line, and ultimately, people give up. It's not easy for them. There are over 135 general information numbers. There are over 300,000 pages of web content at the City of Portland. The Portland, Oregon website replacement project and 311 customer service improvement project, I believe, will simplify and coordinate this information and the services that the community members want and expect to be able to gain access to quickly and easily. The Portland, Oregon website replacement, Power, is a plan to build a new website platform for the city with a vision to make Portland's website community-oriented, where services are easy to find, access, and understand. The 311 Customer Service Improvement Project is a plan for a new first stop for community questions and requests. So the requests would be online, over the phone, or in person. The 311 system will complement the city's existing existing customer service efforts and enhance community access to city information and services. We, the City Council, directed OMF to study the feasibility of varying approaches to improve customer service and increase the community's ability to interact with their city government. This work session will bring us current with the project's progress. And I will turn it over to Mr. Reinhart. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Council. My name is Tom Reinhart, Chief Administrative Officer. I'm very excited to be here today with this excellent team. It is rare to have the opportunity to transform foundational communication tools for an organization as large and influential as the City of Portland. We are lucky to have this chance. I hope and expect that by the end of the work session today, you will feel both more confident and our fantastic leadership, and confident in our integrated approach to these two projects. As your CAO, I have prioritized these efforts because I can think of no more important improvements in our forward-facing services to all Portlanders than the website and a single access point for our services. Literally thousands of residents contact us each month through phone lines and the website, and we should expect even more as we evolve from a small city to a large city. If we are going to meet community needs and expectations, we need to modernize the website and simplify access to services. I'm proud of how both of the teams represented by Michelle and Josh here today have moved the projects forward in the spirit of collaboration. And on behalf of both teams, I want to applaud the level of engagement and involvement of employees throughout the city, hopefully some are watching this, who have helped bring this collective effort to where it is today. Before I hand it over to Michelle, I want to make it clear we need two things from you coming out of our time today: your continued support for all bureaus to make time for website content creation, training, and migration. That's number one. We need continued time and commitment from bureaus. Number two, we need your ongoing support for funding the 311 phasing that you decide is the most appropriate for the city. So with that, let's get into the session. I'll hand it over to Michelle.
Michelle Koenig-North with the Office of Management and Finance Strategic Projects and Opportunities team. Would it be okay if we just did some introductions of who's at the table before we kick off?
Sure.
You want to start, Ida?
I'm Ida Salazar, Business Solutions Manager for BTS.
I'm Josh Mitchell. I am working with Ida and Rick Nixon's e-government team, consulting to product manage the Portland, Oregon website replacement.
I'm Michelle, the project manager for the 311 Customer and Service Improvement Project.
Josh Greger with OMF on the spot team as well with Michelle on the 311 project.
And John Dove with the Office of Community and Civic Life, and I'm supervising the City-County Information Referral Program, and I'm participating with Josh and Michelle on the team.
Thank you.
All right. Well, just to orient you to our presentation today, we've actually interwoven two different projects into a single presentation. The first is the POWER project, as the mayor mentioned, the Portland, Oregon website replacement project, and the second is the 311 customer service improvement project. These projects combined present a significant opportunity to rethink how the city provides customer service to our community and opportunities to leverage on our ongoing investments in both the website replacement and the reconstruction of the Portland building. We share some common goals that you'll hear about today, but the kind of overarching one is to make it as easy and convenient for community members to access government and to make sure that they get what they need in as few steps as possible, that we can really increase that kind of first contact resolution. So I'm going to kick it over to Josh.
Here we go.
So, thank you. Appreciate that. I'm not used to having to need a microphone. Usually I just project. So Portland.gov, and that's not a typo. Thanks to the mayor's office, we were able to register Portland.gov as the new domain that we are migrating to off of PortlandOregon.gov. So everything that we talk about when we talk about the alpha and beta releases, they're all being released at a variation of Portland.gov. So the mayor mentioned this vision, and every time we talk about the beta release, that first release with the public, this is the vision we're really focusing on. We're aiming for a community-oriented website, and community is important here. The current website is actually our intranet and our community portal, right? So we combine the content from those two very different audiences into one place. We're planning on breaking that apart in this new model. So we're going to create that community website first where services are easy to find. And so let's break down what is a service. A service is that transaction that the community makes with their government. And that's a real focus that we have to kick things off, because that's the thing that most people are looking for most of the time. And we've got lots of statistics on that. We need them to be easy to find, which means search needs to be awesome. Right now, our search results are not that great. I would say that the site is not overly search optimized for search engines like Google or Yahoo or Bing. There's a lot of room for improvement there. The other thing about findability is we need to use words that the community use rather than using bureaucratic terms. We also need the site to be easy to access, and we'll break that down into access by what type of device. We know that 50% of our community users are using mobile devices. We also need to think about access regardless of physical or mental ability. We're talking about making a site that's accessible for everyone, regardless of where they're at. And lastly, we need the site to be easy to understand. The average reading level of an adult in the United States is around 8th grade. And many, many of the services that we currently have on our site, we've tested this, they test out at above 12th grade reading level. I actually ran into one the other day that was actually targeting groups in high need. Sorry about that. We're going to try to fix that really awful buzz. Oh, that's so much better. Thank you, Tom. That ease of understanding is really unimportant, and we've got so much content right now that's actually targeted at really high levels. The example I was going to mention is we have something that's targeting communities of need to be able to do grant funding, and it was written at a post-grad level. So it's totally at odds with what it's trying to achieve. So we've got lots of opportunity to improve the understandability of our site. Beyond the beta,
I just want to applaud you for saying that without laughing or even smiling. That the irony there is too rich. We're having fun over here, at least.
Well, it is sometimes challenging to not laugh at some of those interesting problems that we have. Objectives. Overall, the website, we're shooting for a few main things here. We want a community experience that's amazing. That goes back to that accessibility, the usability. We need the site to be friendly. That doesn't mean that it has to be informal. Actually, it can be really curt and succinct and still achieve what it needs to. We need to shift to what's called a content-first design. And this is kind of a concept that a lot of large organizations don't really think about. Thinking about content from where does the user need the content, what does it need to say to them, rather than what do we want to say. And that's a shift. It also means that we shift to something that's less about page layout, because we don't know what device someone is going to see the page with. They could be looking at it on a 2-inch phone screen. They could be listening to it via a screen reader. We need to be thinking about that mobility and voice and search and thinking of it from a content standpoint and not did we have this amazing page layout. We'll have an amazing page layout, but that needs to be secondary to the content itself. We need the platform to be sustainable. One of the ways that we're approaching sustainability in this case is we want it to be a long-living platform. And one of the ways that we can do that is by using open source technologies. We've chosen to use Drupal for the new platform. It's heavily used in governments around the world, everywhere from the White House. Australia is actually standardized on it as their content management system of choice. Locally, Multnomah County is using it. Metro is using it very heavily. It's a highly used system.
What was that name again?
It's called Drupal, D-R-U-P-A-L.
Drupal. Okay.
It's a very open platform. It means lots of people contribute to it, which is awesome because it means that we're not being locked into a proprietary system that we can't customize and fit the needs of our organization. We need the site to be fast and efficient. One of the things I always say is speed builds trust. If your page loads very quickly on a mobile device, people trust it more. Google's done a ton of studies around this, and their target for all of the pages that load from their systems is 100 milliseconds, or basically 1 second, which is really, really fast. It builds trust. We need the site to be secure. We need to take care of the data that our community is entrusting with us. And lastly, we need the site to be easy to use. And I will always prioritize the community's ease of use over an employee's ease of use. And an example of this is whenever employees add a phone number to the system, we actually have them fill out a form to add the phone number into the system rather than just typing it in. And that allows us to actually format that phone number so that it's clickable on a mobile device and you can just call straight from the device. It also means that it reads it correctly to someone who is using a screen reader. So instead of saying 503, 504, it's going to say 503, 504, the digits like you would expect to hear a phone number. So those are the types of things that we're looking at in this system. Let's talk a little bit more about 311.
So the 311 program, as was mentioned earlier, you asked us to come back to you with an implementation plan for a different model of customer service in the city. And what we've done is put together a program proposal that really keys off of this idea that Portlanders shouldn't have to understand how our government is structured in order to access information and services. And that the city really needs kind of an integrated front door so that Portlanders don't need to understand, as you mentioned, which bureau a specific program belongs to. Now, the website is an absolutely critical piece of making this happen. But we also know that about two-thirds of Portlanders prefer phone or some other type of contact with the city, at least for a portion of their needs. So we don't want to go 100% towards online-only customer service. We need to have a multi-format approach to interacting with our community members. When thinking about the overall objectives for a citywide customer service program, we worked with 17 different bureaus and did a community survey and came up with sets of objectives that are both outwardly focused and internally focused. So for Portlanders, we really want to make sure that they can easily and effectively find information and that then they feel empowered because of that to contact government. They feel like their needs are being heard and met. And that they, when they need to contact the city, that they get accurate information back. So again, that kind of building trust with the community. From an internal perspective, we're recognizing that city employees, bureaus, and our leadership are our stakeholders as well, and that we have real opportunities to provide the tools, the capacity, the technologies for employees to really provide high-quality customer service, to reduce inefficiencies, as the mayor mentioned, if people are being passed through different departments on their journey to finding the right answer, that's introducing a lot of inefficiency into our services. We also want to make sure that city leaders have data that can inform service delivery and decision making, and that we can truly refine our service approach and our community outreach to meet community needs and desires. Go ahead. So just to give you a little preview of the implementation timeline, both of these projects are either on or proposing a phased implementation over the next few years. This is both to build on lessons learned and kind of wins in each stage, and also to manage change over a slightly longer period of time. Both of these projects would result in changes both to internal operations and to how the community sees the city. So we have underway the services directory for power. The implementation plan for 311 is in front of you today, and we've kind of kicked off preparation. Starting soon, I'm just going to run through it quickly. We have the beta site coming up next year, I believe.
We're actually shooting for the end of this year. It depends on how quickly bureaus can finish writing the first round of services for the services directory.
And then we're really going to talk to you today about the Portland building reopening next December as a focus of in-person customer service. And then longer term, some additional future improvements that could expand our customer service more broadly.
We'll go into more detail on those as we go through.
So want to make sure that we're not proposing these structures simply from an employee standpoint. When we asked the community, we did a representative survey of Portlanders, what things would make it easier for you to access city information services? Overwhelmingly, we heard a single phone number to call and a more unified and easily searchable website. So these are the two things that you'll see again and again in our presentation. What do we provide? As was mentioned, we have 137 different city phone numbers. This handy pocket phone directory that's passed out at City Hall has 80 listed. And we're really placing a pretty large burden on a community member to understand how our city functions. Go ahead.
The other thing we have with the...
Could you stop for some questions? Yes, of course. Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm actually surprised that we only have 135 because I know over 60 of them are in PBOT.
Yes.
So one single bureau. And how do I put this? I mean, an ability to navigate the system impacts individual people and communities and whether they get services and whether they get their needs addressed. And we've been talking a lot about this in regards to PBOT, which historically has been complaint-based. So who gets their complaints addressed? People who know how to navigate this archaic system and people who feel entitled to. And so I just want to say I'm so excited about having a website and a 311 program that is truly accessible to all community members. I think it won't just improve our customer service and change people's attitudes toward the city. I really think it will change the city. So that's all.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, when you are identifying community wants, who did you actually survey?
Sure.
And the reason I'm asking this is I'm surprised by the small number of people who want an option to text. Mm-hmm. I find it very difficult to communicate with millennials if I'm not texting. So I'm wondering were they represented adequately in the sample? That I guess that would be my first question. And related to that, is this data here on the left in particular similar to what other customer service-related organizations in either the public or the private sector might find in terms of results?
So to your first question about the surveying, we contracted with DHM Research to do a representative phone sample of Portland residents, both using about half landlines and half cell phones. The demographics on that were actually pretty impressive in terms of their representation of community members geographically, by age, by race or ethnicity, and by ability. To the point about millennials, and it may even be Generation Z, I suppose, because of doing a survey, we did not contact people who were under 18. But other than that, we had good representation of all age groups.
Only about 5% said they valued extended office hours, which mm-hmm. suggests to me that 24/7 really isn't a very high priority. Mm-hmm. What is our intention here?
So what we are recommending in terms of phone service is limited full daytime service on weekdays, limited off-hour service on weekends or kind of the shoulder times during the day. And that is not just to make it accessible for the certain portions of the population where that is really critical, but also so that we have the ability to pick up services that need 24/7 or other types of resolution. So dispatch or maintenance issues.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thanks.
You.
If I could just add to that, I think the benefit of 24/7 is really reducing the burden on 911. Mm-hmm. That makes the 911 system work a whole lot better. It might not be that many people are waking up in the middle of the night to pay their water bill, but if they don't have to call the non-emergency number to get a dog barking taken care of, our new community service officers could be dispatched, for example.
I think we're good. Okay, let's move on to the search.
So when we think about searchability of the current site, this is an example that we pulled up. It's kind of small text, so I'll read it off for you. We did a search back in August for trash on the current site. Yeah. When is my trash picked up? This was August. We got Don't Trash the Holiday Tree, the bulk trash rack. Would you explain to me what a trash rack was?
It's actually a... It's related to screening sewers. Yeah.
There we go. Extra holiday trash. As you can see, the top results for looking for something like trash are not very good. So what we're going to be doing in the new system is becoming experts at search. And that doesn't mean we have to match Google. Google does an algorithm based on popularity. What governments have to do is an algorithm based on what are the most commonly searched terms. We have to survey the community and find out what words they use, and then we have to weight those words to give them the proper result. We also have to work with all the bureaus to be really intentional about the words that they're using to describe a service or information. This is really critical. And we have to think about crazy things like stop words. A really great example that was given to me once was a program that was being put on by Multnomah County Library, and the librarians were very concerned that they could not find this program. And the name of the program was a computer class for elderly or aged attendees. And it was called, Is This Thing On? Every single one of those words is ignored by the search engine because they're meaningless words. So this is a really good example. If you search computer class, you find it, but you're not going to find it by title. And so that's the type of thing that we have to consider when we're doing this type of work.
Presumably.
As long as you include the word computer, it's way better.
The other thing is, though, too, is to learn from Google, because I don't use the city's search engine. I just use Google, and it usually gets me almost immediately to what I want to find.
Yeah, definitely.
So we did have a few comments already about how both of these programs could really work to advance the city's equity goals. Advancing equity in terms of access, making sure we have those multiple formats, multiple languages, and that we really prioritize underserved community members and how do we make our information work for them. That we have an equitable experience, whether that's hiring diverse staff who are sitting over a counter from somebody or advancing digital equity through our website. and that, importantly, that we're working towards equitable outcomes. So this was mentioned before. We want to use data to inform but not to determine service delivery, because we don't want to fall into that trap where those who have the best access and who are most knowledgeable about how to navigate the city systems are the ones who are solely getting their needs met.
So we've talked about how this is really multiple projects. It also has to incorporate the Portlanders that are using the service. It has to incorporate the bureaus who are providing the services. But we're going to narrow down a little bit and talk a bit more about the website. When I think about how a website is constructed, it's all about the user journey. We need to be asking ourselves essentially two questions. How did they arrive at this page? What was the path they took? And what are they trying to accomplish when they get there? It sounds pretty simple, but in talking to various content editors around the organization, it's not where we're starting our conversation about writing a service. We tend to start from, well, what did they tell me to put on the page? Not what did the community member need, but what did we want to communicate? And so we have to shift that a little bit. Portlanders don't care about our org charts. It's really true. And as Tom was saying, our employees don't really care much about our org charts either. They just want to get their job done. What they do care about is being able to access things like activities for themselves, for their children. They want to know information about things like construction going on around the city. They want simple information to figure out how to navigate their city, things like parking or parking permits, that sort of thing. So if we think about that journey destination being about need, these are the types of destinations that they're going to. The services are the transactions, right? Those giving or taking something from the community. It could be paying a tax or fee, applying for a permit or license, reporting a problem, filing a claim, requesting financial assistance. We have about 300 services that we have identified, and we're actually tracking in pretty deep detail how we provide those services. Do we provide them online, in person, by phone? We're setting that up as a part of the new services directory. Additionally, we need to be thinking about information that people are trying to look up, and we have a lot of information on the Portland site. This is the long tail of what we provide as a city. Lots of people use the services up front, and a very small number of people want to access the information of a particular thing because it's important to them. So when we think about construction projects or policy projects, those are going to be naturally smaller groups of people. Not huge numbers, but it's important that we put out the information. Parks gets tons of traffic. They're about 20% of our site's overall traffic right now, and that's not even including ActiveNet, which is where they register for classes and stuff. This is just them going to the site for information about parks. Jobs is huge as well.
I think there's something missing off that, and that's that they want to be able to give us information. Like, people didn't necessarily want to know how to get rid of the barking dog. They just want us to get rid of the barking dog.
Exactly.
Or they want to tell us that we're all stupid and we shouldn't be in our jobs. They don't necessarily want any feedback on that. So I think that's something to bear in mind, is that it should be the opportunity for them to give us information as well as for making it clear what we do.
Definitely. And I think one of the forums that we have for that, for instance, is public hearings. We don't do a terribly good job as a city of broadcasting a single place to go to see every public hearing that's available. So people can know how they can participate in government other than through an anonymous forum to tell us how bad we're doing.
Has there been a conversation about replacing PDX Reporter or other portals people use to let us know about potholes, graffiti, vandalism?
That's definitely going to be a part of some of the later phasing for the public site, where we're taking a look at all the existing systems that were built on the current platform, and PDX Reporter is one of those systems. It uses a web form building tool on the back end called TrackIt. For a lot of the collection of that data, and then it gets pushed out to the bureaus. And that needs to be a conversation around how do we do service-based delivery.
So this is an important issue for me, because I get lots of emails with photographs and reports, homeless camps, trash, needles, graffiti, vandalism. And my staff spends a lot of time trying to figure out how to get that information to the right people. And then we're crossing our fingers, hoping that the right people are getting feedback to the people who actually made the request in the first place. Mm-hmm. And there's no reliable means of tracking any of this. So I guess my question is, for this to really be successful, I agree with you that it has to be from the user perspective. The PDX reporter, to me, started out as the right concept, which is how do you just super easily report a problem, and then how do I know that, A, somebody received the request, and, B, that they have either acted on it or are going to give me a reason why they're not going to act on it. I just want the feedback. And as I'm thinking about the use of smartphones, I assume that we'll be able to use these platforms on smartphones, number one. I'm saying yes.
Definitely.
And number two, I'm assuming we'll move towards an app.
Possibly. I would actually say that there's an emerging trend right now that we're timing out pretty well with, which is called progressive web apps.
What's it called, sorry?
Progressive web applications. So basically, the website becomes something that you can bookmark, and it works as well as a native application on a phone. It's a much lower cost of maintenance than actually rolling out applications in, like, say, the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, that sort of thing.
And is it as easy an experience, going back to your comments, because I thought you were spot on saying this isn't about us, it's about the public and the ease of use. Does that make it easier for them to use?
It definitely makes it easier for them to submit. I would say one of the big things with all of our form building needs to be, how did the user get there? What are their expectations once they get there? And did we word the form so that they're giving the information with the expectation of how soon we're going to respond to them? A lot of our systems right now are, they can submit it, but it doesn't actually change policy. A good example of this would be pothole reporting. We could have a highly reported pothole in an area where a lot of people pass over it, but it's lower priority because maybe there's a foundational issue to that road and they can't address it as quickly as they can address something else. So there's definitely a mix there of being able to explain to people, here's what you've submitted and here's the feedback. And I think we do need to get better about the feedback of, this is how soon you can expect a response.
Yeah, I think you're actually hitting on an area that spans across these projects. So kind of thinking from, community member wants to contact the city. They go to the website, or they go to the website on their phone or on their watch or potentially through a voice device, and they have an easy way to find, hey, I want to report this problem. Once we hit that, when we're talking about replacing TrackIt, it's to have that underlying form be consistent, be easy to use, gather the information that we need, and then to have that information go to a tool that can actually make sense of it. A lot of our TrackIts right now, they just go to somebody's email box. So do we have something on the back end, some sort of system that can make sense of that data, route the request, and then track the status and feed that back up either to your office or to the community member directly? So that's something that we're proposing in this implementation plan as kind of multiple pieces across these two projects, but to get to exactly the goal that you're describing.
I think that's critically important because the volume that we get is large. And I think the biggest complaint that I hear from people is, I contacted you, I contacted your office, I contacted a bureau, and I didn't get any response. And that really is not acceptable. We have to find a way to be able to do that. And I realize it means not only investments in the technology platform, it also means investments in the bureaus to be able to deliver on the services. Mm-hmm. Or at least we need to have something that very clearly says, you know, that the PDX reporter sort of set the expectation that if you report a pothole, it's going to get filled. And then it actually doesn't. And that it's almost worse for having the application. People feel like you're being disingenuous with them.
So I think you'll see an early example of that expectation setting when Josh previews the new website.
Great.
As an opportunity to communicate.
Could I ask you one more just futuristic question? I know that in other cities, speaking of potholes, for example, and this could apply for trash or anything else.
Potholes.
I'm so glad I put you in charge of that. The some cities have apps where you can actually submit photographs, and then they get a response. Are we moving towards that, or is that not the right direction?
I believe with PDX Reporter, you can submit a photo currently. Yeah. But again, it is a little bit of a black hole because there's not a response that said, hey, we've got your photograph, and this is the priority of that pothole. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've used PDX Reporter, and it is an unsatisfying experience because you don't get any reply. You don't know if the time you just spent documenting the issue is reaching anyone or going into a giant black hole. I just want to point out that what we're talking about is a CRM or a customer relationship management tool. It has a name. I'm hoping that we're going to talk about that as we move forward, because I do think with a city our size and the volume of calls and emails and requests we're getting, we desperately need something like that. And it wouldn't just improve our service delivery. It would help us collect really valuable data. The mayor's right. We hear from people so often who claim they've contacted the city over and over again. We have no way of verifying that. We don't know who they've talked to. We don't know what action has taken. We are spending exponentially more time on each complaint than we should be. So I know that cost is going to be a big issue, but I really think I think we have to do this no matter what the cost is. But in the long run, we may see some savings because we're not going to be wasting so much time on each complaint.
Definitely. I agree with that. And I also, we need to have a mechanism of saying no. That we spend a lot of time on the affluent people who have the time to complain, sometimes over and over and over again, when actually the answer is we don't have the resources to take care of that. Mm-hmm. So that's something that kind of needs to be built in as well. You know, in the olden days, they had the paper transportation system plan, and you got your project on, and if you were lucky, you saw it march up from number 5,064 to number 4,099.
Yeah.
But at least you knew that if you were to live long enough, you might see it get to the top of the list.
Yeah. I think, and this goes to transparency and equity, I'm beginning to hear some pushback from more affluent areas in the city who feel that they're being completely neglected in this equity equation, and that they are now underserved and being treated inequitably. And I think if we shared those calculations and the way that we prioritize, especially, I mean, PBOT is a great example, but parks certainly, any bureau that's making investments out there in the community, I'd be happy, very happy, if the public could actually see those mechanisms, and maybe there is a list that they get to see their item march up. I hate to see how long that list is.
Well, I think what you're speaking to, and I think what the service directory gives us the opportunity to communicate very quickly and easily, is this an urgent... We have certain things like sewer spills. We've got a 24/7 dispatch line. Somebody is going to get on that right away. We also have things like longer-term thoughts about bike improvements that have to go through an entire planning process, community outreach process. Can we tell people immediately where are you in that spectrum, and how do you get more information? Maybe that has to pass you over to transportation planning information, but at least you know that this is the type of thing that the city plans for and how your idea or request is going to move forward. And I think having this all in one place gives us a better opportunity to quickly and easily articulate that.
One of the big changes with the new website is everything is strongly typed. So a construction project isn't just a subcategory site in the system. It's actually a construction project, and we have special fields that you can put on that. And we could absolutely have fields that spoke to the equity lens or fields that spoke to overall budgeting so that we can communicate that information out in a structural way.
Do you want to just jump to the...
Jump straight to the demo?
To the demo and then maybe come back?
Let me do the user journey bit. Because I do want to talk about where all this information, where people are coming from. When we think about how they're getting to the website, this is something that we've had to spend a lot of time about. They might be using a search engine, say Google. They might be getting an email campaign type message, so something coming from an elected official's office or coming from a particular program in a bureau. It could be information that we're sharing on social media, and we want that to look a particular way. It could be information that is coming to us via referral, so like, say, newspapers or travel sites, parenting sites. It could be signs and billboards. It could be snail mail. We send a lot of mail out to community members. We send a lot of brochures and business cards. We have those sitting in a lot of our service locations where you can walk in and pick up a brochure, and it might have a link on it that takes you back to our stuff. And, of course, we send out transactional emails from a lot of our systems. So, say it's time for your water bill to be due, we send you an email if you've set up an account, and it sends you a transactional email and says, "Hi, Chris. Hi, Tom. It's time for you to pay that bill." So in most cases, we're sending them on to our website. So as we think about the new Portland.gov, 70% in our current site, 70% of our traffic comes through search, particularly organic search engines like Google, Bing, Yahoo. It's mostly Google by leaps and bounds. So as you were saying, Commissioner Fritz, it's very much watching what they're doing and figuring that out. We know that about 3% of our traffic comes to the site via email campaigns. And it might actually be a little bit higher than that, but we don't have a lot of expertise within the bureaus in setting up really trackable, measurable campaigns and then acting on that data. Same thing with social media. We're sitting at around 3%. And by the way, when I'm done here, this is going to add up to 101%, and it's because I used rounding. Somebody told me I needed to call that out.
On those email campaigns, you could actually look at the elected officials' public email boxes, because we get probably 50% of standard emails, same thing 100 times, 300 times.
Over and over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. And then... another 25% of newsletters and various things that we just got on the mailing list somehow. So that would be an interesting analysis that might help you.
Interesting thing as it relates to campaign statistics. Government actually fares better with email campaigns than any other sector of society. If you look at kind of the structure, it's pretty much government. We have an open rate of or engagement rate of anywhere from 10 to 15% depending on the program. And then it goes to private sector where people are selling you things. And then down at the bottom is actually nonprofits where people are asking for money. That is the general structure. Government, we have a relatively good open rate if we use email wisely. So it's a lot of opportunity there. If we're thinking about those things that are coming off of a piece of paper and they're typing in the address, we have about 15% of our traffic that we call indirect. We don't know where it's coming from. It would be coming from things like people typed it in off of a sign, or they had a bookmark on their computer, or they were reading it off of a brochure and they typed it in, or they got that letter from us in the mail and they typed it into the system. We know that's about 15% of our traffic to the site. And then we don't track transactional emails from systems like the Water Customer Self-Service is a good example of this. Portland Online Permitting, the emails that are going to be generated. We need to be intentional for those systems to start tracking how many messages do we send out and how do people engage with them, because that tells us where to invest some of our improvements. I mentioned Google. Somebody could search for something like a service or a guide. They could be searching for one of those projects we were talking about a moment ago. If it's social media, we're probably sending them directly to a program, something like Sunday Parkways. We could be sending them a news article, and we want them to click on that. One of the things we're going to be doing in the new system is we've added the code that actually makes the card appear in, say, like Twitter or Facebook, so you get a nice big image, a good headline, and a description. So it stands out in someone's timeline, and they're more likely to interact with it. We also might want to promote events. The other thing we should be considering, I mentioned tracking for those existing business applications. Sometimes that printed letter is going to send them to the site, but more often it's going to send them all the way to the existing business application. Portland.gov or PortlandOregon.gov, we have a lot of existing back-end systems that we can kind of skip around and send people to it with the fewest clicks, and that needs to be a part of our overall digital strategy, is thinking about that traffic. Lastly, transactional email, we've got to get better at tracking that. Really, really spend some time on it. Service delivery. Earlier you mentioned text as a possible way of engaging with millennials. And service delivery is interesting because if you really want data, you need it to be a structured service delivery. So right now our preferred methods would be online because we can track all kinds of data around it. In person, because if we actually set up this service desk where we've got some service desk software tied to it and we're tracking those interactions, we have an opportunity there. And by phone, for the same reason, if we're tracking those interactions that have happened and we're collecting it into a system, that can all be a very structured way of collecting data. Chat could also fall under that. We don't have any existing examples of chat in the system, but we could absolutely do that, and it could use basically the same operators that you would use for a phone system. Unstructured puts a lot of the pressure on the person making the request. So if you're a community member and you have to send in an email or a text, you have to know what you're asking, and then the person responding to that has to kind of know how to respond back to it. We don't get the same opportunity to structure it out. That's not to say that it can't be very effective. It's just harder to collect meaningful data on it because it doesn't come in a categorized sort of way. Same thing by mail and by fax. We have a lot of services right now that we basically ask people, download this form, fill it out, and mail it into us. That costs us a lot of money, and it's also a very unstructured way that we can't track very well. So we need to be thinking about that as we're building our services directory. Oh, we have a surprising number of services that are by fax is preferable. It tends to be services that are targeting either businesses that would have fax machines, or interestingly enough, some of them are actually targeting like retirees and people in an age population, which I don't think is ideal because they don't always have access to the fax machine. So it's something we need to work on for sure. So here's an example of one of those user journeys. Let's say Chris decides that they want to register a business with the city. They might search the web, and our goal should be in the first three results of their web search. They might search Portland.gov, and I would expect that if they're looking to register a business, we've done the work to figure out what words they might use, and I want to be the first result at the very top to show them how to register a business. And then they land on that service on Portland.gov. So here's where we're going to do a little demo. When they land on the site, this is what they're going to see. We're still very much in alpha. You'll notice the little logo up at the top says alpha. This is our internal release. It's only available to staff. I've done a little bit to prep this in terms of publishing some services that are not quite ready to go because it's on a test instance, so I can demo this right now. First thing you're going to notice is we're really prioritizing search as a way to interact with our site. We know that a high percentage of our users, that 70% comes in from organic search, they're coming in from Google, one of the first things that they're doing is actually searching from our homepage, because 80% of those people that come in through search engines were searching for either the word Portland or Portland, Oregon. So then they land on our site and they are trying to do something. Now, unfortunately, right now, I think frequently what they're doing is they're landing on our site, they're trying to use our search engine, they're failing, and they're going back out to Google to restructure their search. We need that first instance of search to be awesome. So when they land there, we want that to be the first thing that they see. You'll notice, too, that we've got some top searches that we've kind of we can use these to target services that are very seasonal, things like leaf compost. Right now, we just got the letter that you can go buy leaf compost is a perfect example of that. Business tax and arts tax are obviously very seasonal. From the end of the year through the April 15th, it's huge for being able to find those. Those, by the way, are our two most visited service pages on the current site, business tax and arts tax. We know that people want jobs, and so we can highlight jobs and point them off to our job listings on government jobs. And lastly, we might want to highlight things that are frankly important for other reasons, and ADA accommodation is a perfect example of this. We might want to make it so that they don't even have to type anything in the search box. They can go straight to it. We do need to limit that list to about 7. I always say 5 plus or minus 2 is the magical sweet spot for making choices. So if we go above that, we tend to lose a lot of value.
How are you going to integrate language options?
That's a very good question. We're not doing it as a part of alpha or beta, but it is planned for the overall website project. A really good example of the approach that we plan to take can be seen on Multnomah County Library website. Okay. There's a little language switcher across the top of the page. And their approach is that if the content is meant for everyone, then they translate it. They have, I believe, 5 target languages that they use. We actually have 10, which makes it very challenging from a city standpoint. If it's something, for instance, they offer computer classes in Chinese, they don't bother translating that back to English because an English speaker isn't going to go to that class. So they do some targeted translation based on usage, mm-hmm. and I think we're going to have to do that from a cost standpoint as well. But I think it's a real opportunity in looking at the new platform, because every page can be translated and it gets those little translation options across it. It might be an opportunity for us to centralize some of our translation services and figure out a way to reduce our costs there. Aside from search, the next thing that we want to show them is a set of topics that they can relate to. So we started with the actions that they might take: pay online, permit or license, report a problem. Below that, we talk about who they are. Are they a resident? Are they a business? Are they an employee or retiree? That allows us to narrow down the set of services or information we want to present to them. And then lastly, we use these topics on the bottom. You'll notice a lot of those topics align with our bureaus, but they're not bureau names. They're what we do. And these are words that, as we go into the beta project, we're very much going to be focused on measuring how well did we do in choosing these words that represent the work that the city does. It's really, really important that we choose the right words. So let's go with that example of registering a business. Aww. Live demos.
Well, we have it on the presentation.
I do. I'm just going to refresh real quick. And this is why you always prepare yourself for the unplanned. You were going to see the very first search result was register your business. When you rely on the internet as your demo, you're always in trouble. So this is an example of a pretty well-written service at this point. Register your business. We've taken a lot of time in trying to figure out the description, working closely with the revenue team and thinking about it. We gave them an expectation of how long it should take them to fill out the form. We might even want to expand this to say, well, this is the expectation of how soon you'll hear back with us with your business ID or something like that. This is meant to be search engine optimized. It's meant to be a landing place where somebody gets the description of the service. You'll notice that there is a link there for register your new business. That actually takes them to the existing business application. We don't index our existing business application. So a perfect example of this would be POPS, the Portland Online Permitting System. We're going to need a set of services on portland.gov that describe what we do, and then we're going to pass them into that online permitting system. That's the best way that we can kind of set this up, since most of those business applications actually require you to log in before you can interact with it. One of the things you'll notice here is that there's multiple tabs, and these are the modes that someone could interact with that service. We're actually tracking this on every single service that we're putting in the new directory. Is it available online, which means that there has to be an application that they can fill out, some sort of form. By mail, which means that they need to usually download a document, fill it out, mail it into us. By fax, because we have a few of those. In person, which is going to be tied to the service locations that we have. We have several around the city. Some other service modes that are not showing up there are by email. Another common way to do it. And in the case of register your business, technically you probably could do it by phone, but we have some documentation requirements. So it's an example of one where we didn't have by phone as a bet. we can track those. And the other thing that we can do is we can actually track their engagement with each of the modes. So if it was a phone number, how many times did a mobile device actually click on that phone number? That's something we can track at the level of the service and give that feedback back to the bureaus. So it's going to be a powerful new way to start gathering metrics about this this new site. You're probably wondering, when do we get all this? The service directory is underway. We're working with the bureaus right now. At this point, I believe I've done 26 content workshops with bureau content editors, where we've sat down with the bureaus that had the highest use services and helped them with rewriting those services. And that's where we identified, for instance, the example of the post-grad level of language used to write a service. We're trying to help them get them all down to that 5th to 8th grade reading level. Hoping that we can get enough of those in place that we can go ahead and open a public beta before the end of this year. And that will allow us to start collecting data. One of the examples that we've talked about doing is a feedback form, a survey with stakeholder groups. And another thing that we will undoubtedly do as a part of this data collection is some kind of guerrilla user research where we go out to, say, the Development Services Center and sit and actually have people try out the site and use it and tell us how well did we do on some of those topics and naming conventions that we've put in place. So it's really important to collect all that data. Let's shift over to in person.
Great. So talk a little bit, go ahead and move forward one slide, about the 311 service framework. So you've seen a lot of focus on what's available online. We also want to have in-person and over the phone, sorry, let me put that on, over the phone contact options available as well. And the idea here is that we have a cross-trained staff who would be employed within the Office of Community and Civic Life, who would be able to help a community member or business owner resolve most of our kind of frequent requests. So that could be asking for information, as you saw, whether that's kind of ongoing information, how do I find this park, or kind of more timely information, whether that's I've heard about an upcoming meeting, can you tell me more about it, or there's construction happening on my street, what's going on? So really helping our community members navigate all of the information within the city. And then also helping them either report problems, request service, or apply for positions, jobs within the city, for things that are kind of less complicated, leaving the more complicated, sensitive, or confidential requests as referrals. So just to use some really concrete examples, a lot of those transportation things or the things you see on PDX Reporter would kind of fall under the 311 service framework. Something like completing a development permit application that requires multiple steps, multiple reviews, would be something referred to BDS in this instance.
Michelle, you said that it would be located in the Office of Community and Civic Life. Could you tell me why you're making that recommendation?
Sure. So we've looked at about 5 different options within the city, bureau options, and we were really looking at a few different considerations. One is, does the bureau have experience with outward-facing community service and really have the ability to manifest the city's goals around equity and kind of inclusive engagement with our community members? We were also looking for contact center type experience and a familiarity with all of the range of services that our bureaus provide. And we actually have that very strongly in the existing information and referral program. Kind of similarly, we were looking for a cultural fit where we have the internal kind of customer focused culture within the organization. So because of those reasons and recognizing that anywhere within the city, this would be a new kind of expanded role, we did feel like the Office of Community and Civic Life was the best fit.
So colleagues, obviously this is one of the key questions that we need to figure out soon. Because the other option would be to have it be a standalone bureau, and another one would be to have it in with emergency communications and have a bureau of communications. So tell me, or maybe we don't take the time now, we have another discussion as to why you've... Yes, I agree. I mean, it's always been a challenge to... There's a lot of good places that it could live. And now that I'm in charge of the